The Centre Steer podcast is sponsored by Commonwealth Classics and Knightsbridge Overland. The Centre Steer podcast, a podcast by, for, and about Land Rover owners.
It's now time for a field report. The Centre Steer podcast attended the 2023 winter romp up in Benton, Waterville, Maine. Dixon and I were able to attend. Of course, we came from different places, and we showed up at the winter romp, generally hosted by Bruce Fowler, who has been on the program before. Dixon, what'd you think of the romp?
Well, it's one of the larger Land Rover events in North America, which is pretty unique considering it takes place in the dead of winter in the middle of Maine, of all places.
Middle of nowhere. It is distant, isn't it?
It is.
And there's still more in Maine to go to. This isn't even the distant parts of Maine. This is the edge of before you get out of quote-unquote civilized Maine.
Yeah, this is really part of what would have been called New Ireland, which was the northern part of Maine and so on, that was nearly part of Canada, but after the War of 1812, but wasn't. But yes, you can keep going north and get into the Maine North Woods, which is a whole different camping and adventure.
I can imagine.
To go up there.
Yeah, in the past years I've gone up to Romp, it's only 4 hours from Quebec City. So which is like, you know, that's a haul. Having been to Quebec City a number of times, like, oh, I'm 4 hours away. I'm just going to drive due north and I get right into Quebec City. It's wonderful.
Well, it's 7 hours due east for me, which isn't too bad.
Oh, for me, it's about 12-hour journey from the Pittsburgh area. It's I do it in 2 days now. It's easier that way.
Well, what will surprise some people, the longest traveler this time around was a guy that came from Australia. And there was another person that came up from Costa Rica.
Did they come just for the romp, or were they just in the United States and thought, well, I'll extend my stay and come up to the romp?
I don't know the details, but they were there. Yeah, there was somewhere around 170 trucks registered. How accurate that is in terms of who's actually there, Bruce would have the exact number, because there's some people that never register but are there all the time because they've been to the past 25 of them or so. It was one hell of a turnout. It's just amazing how those woods can just absorb all of those trucks.
Oh, absolutely.
On the trails and so on.
The weather generally was nice, especially on, well, nice is a relative term, of course. It was sunny and bright on Saturday and Sunday, but boy, was it cold. I was out Friday night and it got down to, I think, 17 degrees Fahrenheit. It was
nippy.
It was bitter cold. Just, yeah, I had come prepared for cold weather, but it was still cold. I highly recommend if you're doing such activities, take your linen lined pants. That's a John Costage recommendation right there for you. You think, oh, pants, I'll be fine. I've got a heavy coat and I've got gloves and socks. And like, you know what? The line pants, that's a nice little added touch, little bonus. And if you think you're like, well, I'll take them. And you know, if it gets cold, I'm going to, no, just put them on. Put them on a whole weekend. Don't take them off.
And boots are very good. And a key thing for having boots is that when you're about to step someplace on the trail, go and see if there's any tire marks or footsteps in that spot, because
this is another top tip from the Centre Steer team. Dixon and I were out on Saturday. We were running together. I was riding with George Bull, and I think you were riding with Ben Smith, right?
Ben Smith.
It's cold, but it's also sunny. And the trails are really nice trails. They were, you know, they're wide enough and in some places deep enough, but it would ice over after someone would go through in minutes. It would ice over again. You know, someone would go through, break the ice, get through. And some of the ice at times would be 6 inches thick. You might see a 9-inch, you know, thick chunk of ice floating around. And then it would go through the obstacle, because we would get out and watch them come through the obstacle, take some pictures, take some video or help spot. And then you were walking back to get to the next truck, and we would tell ourselves and each other, if you see tire tracks, you should walk on those, because a vehicle's gone on them and you know it's safe. It's not, you're not going to plunge into the icy, deep, icy water. And guess what each of us would do? We would forget that. We would step where tire tracks weren't and ploop right into the cold drink.
Ben has a wood shackle buried in one of the swamps where it just went flying when I stepped in the wrong spot.
That's right. I think you did. You stepped and a couple things flew out of your hand and we're like, well, where did that shackle go? We're not looking for it. Not looking for it.
Not at all. Then I did it a foot away the second time with the other first left foot, then right foot.
I posted some video in the Center Steer YouTube channel. And there's one, I think I included the video where I fell down. I was as Georgia Bull was coming through an obstacle and I'm on the side and I just bloop, slipped right on my behind. And and George was nice enough. I was clear of him. There was no way he was going to hit me. But of course, he can't tell because you really can't see. He thought I went in front of the truck and I didn't. But at least he stopped.
Well, the other thing that's really helped this year is they put up do not enter symbols on a number of the trails and so on. And one of the exercises Bruce undertook with Carlane Riston and some others was creating trail names with arrows and so on. So now you know that this is the Ridge Trail and such.
Very helpful.
And now you can, you know, it's a level of organization on this stuff. So you don't meet head on at one of these water obstacles and then one group has to either get to the side or turn around to pass.
Yeah, there's also a downloadable map. I know a couple of the, yes. I think George had done that. And I also rode with Ned. He had downloaded a copy of the map that you could put onto your GPS.
That's one of the advantages of actually registering. They send you a map. If you don't register, you don't get the map.
There's another top tip from the Center Steer team. Register so you can get the map and go, oh, I can see where to go. Then again, if you're I would suspect, correct me if I'm wrong, sir, that some of the people who didn't register are probably traveling in a series truck or older vehicle. Probably, you know, the most electronics they have is the watch on their wrist.
Some of them may have a Petronix, which is hyper modern technology for most of these people.
An abacus is hyper technology for a series owner.
You were right about the size of the ice and stuff like that, because Dave Bobek, he made it probably 10 feet on to one trail on the Dickey Road before he managed to put a piano-sized chunk of ice in between the rear cross member, the rear axle, and the two springs. 2 hours to extract it.
Oh,
that was with help.
Oh, what was he driving?
That was a Red Square.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, geez. Oh, that's, there's no fun there. I'm not going to reveal the listener's name because I know they listen, but they do drive a new Defender and they put a small tree branch through one of the, it turns out there's multiple, one of the radiators in their new Defender. Took some time to get that out.
Yes, I saw the, I know which one you're speaking about. One case where the series vehicle with the radiator protected by a chassis cross member is probably a safer idea than where JLR put a couple of the radiators on the new Defender.
I guess that's a good and a bad that there's multiple radiators. Probably the good is that if you, I guess it was, there's one in front and there's two like on the side angled behind the headlights. And so it seemed like this one would have been the passenger side on a North American spec Defender right through the thing. He's really lucky that it didn't take anything else out and do any other further damage. Really. It took out the coolant. And coolant leaked everywhere. But apparently with having multiple ones, you didn't lose all coolant.
Actually, this year, there wasn't too much carnage on the trails either. The usual number of brake lines and flex lines came adrift, I guess. I guess the only spectacular bit of carnage was the chaps in the LR3 from down South Maine that at night fell into a bit of a hole while going forward and broke the power steering rack in half. So you had the two wheels splayed out for all to see.
I showed up just after they had been pulled out from that location, and that's on the power line. And that section
was on the power line.
That section of the power line ate so many trucks. That was all weekend. There was someone, I swear, someone was stuck there all weekend at some point. And in fact, on Friday night, I ran I ran with Ned and his new Defender. He was nice enough to let me ride with him. So we rode for about an hour. This is after the dinner. He said, "Hey, you want to take a night run with me?" I'm like, "Sure, absolutely. Why not? So I'm here." And we jumped in, probably got on the trail by 10:30, rode around the trails, had a good, really good time. There was one obstacle, which was, I think I did post video of this also, where a new Defender D90, not a new one, excuse me, Heritage D90, had gone into what, I don't remember the name of it, because again, it's dark. It's probably at this point, like 11:30 at night, and it's dark, and I'm not familiar with that part of the trail, but it's almost like, it feels like a lake of water and ice and mounds of almost like a mogul, and he plows through this thing, and I swear, I was out... I'm in the new Defender with Ned, and I swear that that older D90 went like 90 degrees up to get up over an embankment. If it wasn't 90 degrees, it was like 45, and he's pounding through there. And Ned goes, "Okay, it's my turn." I'm like, "Maybe you should check out how deep that water is before you go." And he goes, "Yeah, it's a good idea." So he gets out, finds a stick. The stick goes all the way down. And he's like, "I'm gonna." Think I'm going to turn around. Like, good idea, sir. Good idea. Capital idea. It's 11:30 at night. You're not sure what this obstacle is going to be about. And the stick disappears. And it was like a 2-foot stick disappears into the drink. You don't want to go in there at this point. So we turned around and then we're on the way out. Well, before I get to the way out, new Defender, really nice. It was really nice. I sat in the back for a good bit, plenty of room, comfortable. You could have a conversation. I think you had to turn the radio down once. Because we're like, I can't hear. You know, we're having a conversation. And you could, the other radio was up. And he had added all of these external lights. I think in a video, too, and some pictures I put out there, you can see is like this wall of light, which was, at that time of night, was perfect. It actually was very helpful. Because he had lights not only in front, but also off to the side so you could see obstacles. And it was really, really... very helpful to do. And if you look on the front of his truck, he put a strip of lights in the middle of the front fascia. And there's a strip of lights there. Now that looks familiar. And it dawned on me, it looks just like the Lego set. Cause I added the optional, I upgraded on my Lego Defender. I added the lights to it and it looks just like the Lego lights right in front. And so it was pretty neat. And actually that older Defender too had lights in the wheel arches. And I thought I'm thinking, oh, that's not like, why would you do that? I thought it was just more of an effect just to give it some light. But actually at nighttime, it was easier, even though if you were spotting or just going through where other people were spotting you, the light casting down from inside the wheel well was able to see obstacles better. So while at first blush, you're thinking, that's not really... helpful. Why would you do that? It just seems like unnecessary and maybe doesn't look right. It's actually very helpful and useful to see. You could see where the wheels were. And even if you weren't the driver, but the spotter would help them out.
Yeah.
So we're headed on the way out and they're like, "Hey, let's go check out the power line before we go back." Famous last words. it's like, I don't know, 1 o'clock now in the morning.
It was 1 o'clock when they called.
Yes. I had been up since... probably like 10 o'clock because I had driven from, I'd stayed in Massachusetts the night before and drive over there. And then a couple of the trucks that were with us, they went up ahead to go check out the power line. And we're sitting back at that parking area, that main parking area off of Dickey Road, just kind of hanging out there. And we're there for a while and they're not coming back and they're not coming back. We're not coming back and get on the radio and they're like, yeah, we're stuck. What? So we go up. Pull up and there's an older D90 stuck. And then there's the other D90 that's trying to get them out. Well, can't get them out because it's all like a marshland down there.
Yes.
So it's in between the two hills. Those not familiar. So you're on this, imagine cut into the trees on a very wide, what do you say? About 40, 50 feet of clear space.
Yeah.
I don't know, 12, 20 KV line going down the middle, a power line. And on poles, you come off of Dickey Road, which is the entrance to the area, And there's like a parking area, which means it's just an open space right on the power line. Off to the right, you go, there's a flatness, and then it drops down just a little bit into this marshy area. Then there's the steep hill. So when you hear people talking about the ramp and the power line trail, it's that steep hill that they're talking about that everyone is challenged on, which I can talk about that too. That'll be when we get to Saturday, talk about Saturday. So they're on this marshy area, which... And if it's frozen, it's fine. And yes, I know it's cold, but it had been warm a bit before this. So it's not completely frozen ground. And there's, you're on like a land bridge, if you kind of imagine that, and it's kind of marshy on the other side. Well, someone might get stuck, or there's two people coming. So one goes off to the side, then they get stuck into this marshy area. Then of course it creates these other moguls get created. And they're, and so Truck one gets stuck. Truck two goes to pull them out. It gets stuck. Truck two backs out, gets out of there. Finally, somehow, I think they ended up having to winch using a tree, which was, you know, that area. It's what, 30 feet off the trail there? Oh,
it's a long way off.
It's a long way off. Gets out of there. He radios us. I need another rope to get this to, so I don't get stuck again. So comes back, gets the rope. On the return, get stuck again in a different place, right in front of where that LR3 was dropped dead there. So he gets out of that finally, goes and then retrieves truck one finally. I was so cold and there was nothing I could do to help. So I sat in the truck for a couple hours, and there was a Range Rover Classic. There were two, I call them kids because they were probably in their mid-20s. And they had gotten a Range Rover Classic stuck off to the far side of that trail. I think you probably know where I'm talking about, yeah. Dixon. They were on the other side of that main trail. So they didn't know. They're like, yeah, we didn't really know how marshy and soft it was. And we, we're trying to get out, and the winch burned up. And it's right. So they had winter clothes on, but not really sufficient. So Ned's like, get in the truck. So they were done. So they got in the truck. So they fell asleep because they were cold, and they're trying to warm up. And we finally, I get back to the hotel 4 a.m. I was asleep by like 4:20, and got up early the next day to go to Big G's for breakfast,
which was just completely overloaded. They actually had to close the doors at one point because the lineup was just too long, and they just slammed the whole kitchen.
For those who have not been to the Romp, you may have heard us talk about Big G's. It's a local institution restaurant, and that's like the meeting up place in the morning before you go out on the trail.
And serves absolutely massive sandwiches or pancakes or
anything.
Order two eggs, and it looks like they've dropped a dozen on your plate.
These sandwiches, I know we've talked about these sandwiches before, and we say they're big. No, they're humongous. They are massive. One of their sandwiches could probably feed a family of four for a weekend. They wrap them in paper so you can take it on the trail, and these things, and like I said, you could feed a family of four for 4 days. Like if you're going to get stuck somewhere, it's the perfect thing to have. They're massive. They're huge. The top tip, my top tip on Big G's, get a half of one. But every time I go, like, oh, I got to get a whole sandwich. I forget how big they are.
Well, it's your meal for the day to drive back home.
Yes.
No, Big G's was completely overloaded on Saturday. Of course, people are coming in the side door and such. And because of that, everyone on Sunday decided that they were not going to go to Big G's. They were going to go and have breakfast at the Waterville Grand Hotel, and it got slammed. And Big G's was actually fast, efficient, and it was great to go and eat at Big G's on Sunday.
Big G's is an experience. You have to, if you go to the Romp, you need to go to Big G's at least once, have the experience.
Though Habitat's, really upping their game up on the Millennium Green with the hut that they've got there with, they're providing mac and cheese and chili and tea and coffee and all sorts of things for donations. You almost don't need to go to Big G's for the sandwiches and so on, because you can all go eat there, which is, it's a complete change and so on.
Yeah, I agree. That area was really nice to have as a central point, which had not happened before that I recall, where you now had a on the trail section before you used to go to Bruce's house, which was a couple miles away. Now you could just hang out on the green. And there was, as Dixon says, there's a little shack where they had food and drink. And then there was a nice big bonfire, which was great to warm up. And they had some picnic tables you could sit at. And, it was a neat little area there. And it's right near the Pit of Despair.
You can just, it's a short walk over for entertainment.
Yes.
So see who wants to be lured into the Pit of Despair, because yes, they can get out without any problem. No one else knows how to drive in the Pit of Despair and they're better. Well, it is one of the most entertaining aspects of the Winter Romp.
Unless you're in a Pinsgauer.
Yeah, that was six-wheel drive.
Yes, that was. That thing was impressive. There was a Pinsgauer, as you might expect from mentioning it, there on the trail, and that thing was impressive.
That was when Ron got stuck going down the trail into the pit. There was plenty of time to, as he tried to extract himself out of the downhill portion, for the Pinsgauer to go down the other side, wallow around in the mud at the bottom, and then go back out. Now, to finish off with Carnage, you know, it's a testament to the ability of, you know, Land Rovers turned their owners into mechanics. That LR3 drove home on Monday. Needs a bit of a wheel alignment, I understand, but it made it back down to Buxton, Portland area.
Oh, yeah, that because both wheels were splayed out. I mean, it looked pretty rough. Yeah, they got stuck at the bottom of the power line trail there in the marsh. They were an early casualty of that. And I guess during the winching, my understanding is the wheel was out a little bit. And then I think as far as winching, and it got pulled in. And then I think that's when it caused the tie rod ends to break, I think is what I'd heard.
They shattered the power steering rack.
Okay.
It just was pulled apart. And there was a spare on a donor parts vehicle at Bruce's. So they pulled the engine, pulled off the power steering rack complete, went out to the power line, pulled the broken one off and all the bits and pieces and put the donor one on, and were able to drive it home.
Wow. That's impressive. I didn't hear about that part. That's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing besides Habitat up on the green on the last couple of romps, there's been silent and active auctions to raise money, not only for the Millennium Green, because it's cost money to pour in the thousands of tons of gravel to rebuild the Dickey Road and such, but also for Habitat for Humanity. Jeff Aronson did a great job in the auction to get people to bid up things. In fact, you were the lucky winner. You managed to win that Freelander-only parking sign against a feverish, there it is in the background, a feverish bidding war when Steve Bears of the Underpowered Hour did a telephone bid in to try and win those Freelander items. But you won in the end.
I did.
They raised thousands of dollars for both the green and for Habitat for Humanity with the auction, and all sorts of people were donating, you know, parts, items, and so on.
There was a Defender rear door. There was a bonnet for a series truck. There was a brush bar for, I think, a Rangy Classic.
Yeah.
There was all sorts of things.
Atlantic British donated items. So did Rovers North, LL Bean, a number of different vendors and so on.
Lots of recovery
donated stuff. Oh yes,
which was good. I think there were some radios too. Yeah, it was all for a good cause. And the people that I was sitting up close there, and I know the people that were helping out to run it. It's a lot of work, so kudos to them for having it run smoothly and well.
Oh, the romp requires a lot of volunteers. You know, people like Paula in the background handling all the t-shirt registrations and stuff like that. Carlane with the auction and all of those items and so on. Jeff Aronson, you know, a lot of people are helping Bruce go and make this happen, let alone all the, you know, people like Paul and so on that live locally that are out there all the time, you know, to prepare those trails for the winter romp, to get all the deadfalls and everything out of the way is quite a lot of work.
And to mark the trails, cut the trails, and have the firewood there for in the Millennium Green parking area.
Oh yeah.
Or whatever. What are we calling that? That little gathering spot.
I'm not sure what the
name,
the Habitat Green, or I'm not sure what it's called. Bruce would know, but you know, the Massachusetts Club came up, you know, organized by Chris Brown a number of times to get the wood and so on. And, you know, put a couple of cords there because to keep a bonfire going for 24 hours for an entire weekend consumes a fair amount of wood.
Yes, it does. Yeah, that was the ending spot on Saturday. I'd ridden with George Bull, was nice enough. I met him there at the romp, and he's like, hey, I have an open spot. You want to come in? He's like, absolutely. You know, there are some people that are just have the magic touch, and I'm nominating George Bull for that special award of he has the magic off-road touch. He makes it look effortless without difficulty, and I'm just impressed every time I saw him do something, go through some sort of obstacle. Amazing.
And he did the whole weekend and all those trails without breaking anything either.
Which I heard, from Joanna, his wife, that was a special treat.
A unique occurrence.
or maybe he just hasn't admitted to anything. But the LR3 was, Disco 3 was impressive. The things he put it through, did all the obstacles because we rode together on that Saturday. And went on all on the same trails there. And hey, the Pinskauer could make it. The LR3 can.
Yeah. No, the Winter Romp is certainly an event to everyone should go and try at least once. It's free.
Yes.
Which is even more unique for, you know, any, you know, most of the events in North America.
Oh, so for any car gathering of any kind, it doesn't matter whether it's a Land Rover gathering, you know, even if you go to a car show, you're usually ponying up a couple bucks just to pay for some general insurance for the site or organization, you know, at least with the romp and, you know, what Bruce has done with all the help, admittedly, is fantastic. It is a really cool event. The thing is to time it so that you get there when the weather is not snowy, you know, not coming down. But you do want snow on the ground. Yeah, on the way up on Friday, I did 2 days from Pittsburgh, and I stopped in Massachusetts, and then on Friday made my way up and stopped at Lambert Scarborough. They were having a nice little gathering spot for local Land Rovers and those coming on the way. They're about 90 minutes, I think, from site. And so we met up there, and they gave us a nice little gift bag of, you know, a hat and, and I think some chips. Then there was a little parade leaving the dealership, and weather was nice. It was sunny. It wasn't too windy. And then about half an hour into the journey, the snow starts coming down. There might have been sleet. I don't know. And I didn't take my Defender. I took my Jetta, and it's a 70-mile-an-hour road. I slowed down to 60. There were folks passing me at higher speeds. Invariably, there was a tractor trailer passing me at high speed, and it's not like super a lot of snow. I've been in this snow before. It's not like it wasn't that bad. I think if you were from the South, you probably would be all freaked out, but it wasn't that bad. But it was enough that you should probably slow down. You know, it wasn't, you know, it was getting a little slick. You're not sure what was going on. I did have winter tires on the Jetta, so that was helpful. But there's this tractor trailers going by me. And wouldn't you know, I think every one of them, there's a car on the bumper of this tractor trailer, and they're doing like 70, 75. And invariably that car had a main license plate.
Yeah.
So like, wow, that was impressive. Flying down the road. You know, it's funny, made it to the event, and then it seemed like the snow stopped.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. That little stretch that about, 90 minutes or so to get up to the hotel and get up to the area. That snow happened and got there and it was fine.
Yeah. Yep. This is It's a perfect first rally to start the year off. For us up here, the next one's going to be the Maple Syrup Rally at the end of April up over in Quebec. And I guess the next big one then is going to be the 75th Diamond Jubilee at Greek Peak, Cortland, New York.
Absolutely. And hopefully there will be no snow, and hopefully it will not be 19 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, it is a ski slope, but I don't think the snow will still be there.
No, I hope not. Yes, I'm looking forward to it's nice warm weather. That would be nice. And sitting around the campfire in the evening, having a beverage or two of your choice and hanging out around the fire, such as we can have. No ground fires, but I'm sure there will be some fires.
Oh, I'm sure there will be. All planned out for your, as I've heard or read, you and Mr. Barris are going to be Team Freelander against Team 80 Inch with Ike and I.
Sure. Whatever you want, Dixon, whatever you want. My planning right now is to get folks to register for the Creek Peak event in June. So we know if you're coming or not. And we can prepare for that. I know I'm taking the Defender, and that's what I'm doing.
You just had a 109 frame delivered. You're not going to have the 109 ready for Greek Peak?
If the 109 is available, we have another member of the podcast who I would gladly lend said vehicle to, that they could then drive to the Winter Romp. Mm-hmm. Drive to the Winter Romp on the Mine. They could drive to the Diamond Jubilee. Mm-hmm. Because I think Morgan is not going to have his vehicle ready. It's 6 hours or so from where I am to Greek Peak, so it's not too bad. And then in this series, that would probably be about 7 hours, you know.
I think it's four and a half for us from Ottawa.
Really? That's actually way closer than I anticipated. Okay. I thought you were about the same, 6 hours.
No, it's not that long. It's an hour and a half to the border, half hour to Watertown, hour to Syracuse, and then it's what, another half hour maybe, something like that.
The Diamond Jubilee is coming up in June, and hopefully hearing about the main Winter Romp gives you some inspiration. If you were considering coming to the Diamond Jubilee, it gives you some consideration, and also gives you some consideration. You should attend a romp. Come check it out. Hopefully the weather's nice to you as it can be, and take your vehicle out into some snow and challenge yourself to that. But that's the romp.
The romp's been going on for 24, 25 years or so. It's a fantastic event. It's one of many events that have been going on for a long time in North America. And really, people should be getting out and going to some of these events farther afield. They're quite an adventure, and you may find that some of these things, whether it's the, you know, the Vintage Grand Prix in Pittsburgh, or the birthday party, or the Winter Romp, even Mid-Atlantic Rally, they become addictive, and you keep going over and over again. There's good excuses to actually keep your vehicle running.
Those are wise words, Dixon. Good reasons to keep your vehicle running. This has been a Center Steer's Field Report from the Maine Winter Romp 2023. That section of the power line ate so many trucks.